UFOs and the extraterrestrial message. We're going to talk about all of that in just a moment with Richard Lawrence. He's back with us on Coast to Coast AM standby as we go live to the United Kingdom. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let me tell you about Richard Lawrence, our guest for the next couple hours, has accumulated a very unique breadth of knowledge and experience in all kinds of things, body and mind, spirit, including the areas of UFOs. Richard was Lord Kimberley's speechwriter during the House of Lords UFO debate back in 1979 and was the first to bring declassified CIA and Pentagon UFO files to Britain back in 1980. He launched a successful campaign in the United States for a release of UFO data from the FAA. That was in 1987, and was the first to reveal Soviet UFO papers in Britain back in 1990. Richard, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, George. Merry Christmas to you.
You too, my friend. And are you familiar with the work of Nick Pope, another great Brit?
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, of course, Nick, I think he's a regular on your program, I believe.
Yes, absolutely.
He has been a whistleblower this year, as I'm sure your listeners will know over here. It's an amazing year, isn't it,
for everything
coming out from government sources.
Oh, my gosh, it sure has. And as a speechwriter, it dawned on me, I had seen a few months ago, again, The King's Speech, that 2010 movie. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, yes. I have, yeah, George VI, yes. Yes, Colin Fry, I think.
Well, being a speechwriter, did you have to work with whomever was reading the speech?
I mean, I must be honest. I was in my 20s then, so I was more advising on it. We did put the speech together, and obviously it was Lord Kimberley, the late Lord Kimberley, who sort of called the shots in the end. And that was a time over here, George, when the government was still officially denying it. Completely denying it. They felt the need to expose every single sighting that came up. And the outcome of that debate was that, of course, they did, possibly by accident, admit they had thousands of files on UFOs, which had been denied up to then. Actually, talking of Nick Pope, I spoke to him on his first day in his job at the Ministry of Defense in charge of the UFO department there. I phoned him up because I was in touch with that department before he got there.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, do you believe in UFOs, Nick? And he said, I don't know. Well, he knows now.
He really knows now. He's a believer.
Yeah, that's for sure.
That's a small world. It really is. Mm. Well, governments haven't directly come out yet and said, these things are real. We know where they're coming from. But they're kind of hinting that something strange is happening. What do you think, Richard, is getting that information out? Are they afraid that researchers like you, great researchers, are going to spill the beans? Or are they trying to beat us to the punch? What are they doing?
My own view is there is a sort of deliberate campaign to get at the information out a bit, not fully, but a bit. And, it's not being done through the front door, but the back door. So, like, a couple of days ago, you had, you know, John Brennan, former CIA director, you may well have covered that,
yep,
coming out and saying he believes in alien life and in those so-called tic-tac U.S. Navy footage. If any listeners haven't seen that yet, it's probably on your website. It's certainly on mine. Pentagon stuff has been coming out even this month. Nick Pope has come out this year and said that, as a whistleblower, and said, you know, there was a photograph in the British Ministry of Defense that high ups in intelligence told him was not from this world, the craft. You've got the Israeli, a former head of intelligence of their space agency, Eshed, coming up and saying that that's well known in their ministry and by Donald Trump that UFOs exist. And they're just waiting for the time to come, and a lot more was said by Eshed. And so it seems to me that these are people who are either retired or apparently retired. It's hard to know. Maybe some of these are working under direct. I mean, there are some who think Nick Pope still works for the government. I'm not saying that's true. But either way, they're allowed to come up with these things. And so I think had it not been for COVID, 2020 would have been an absolutely key year, and it would have been much bigger in the mainstream news, what's really been going on in terms of revealing out-and-out statements that you know, UFOs or extraterrestrial spacecraft, let's call them what they are, really do exist, and coming from government sources.
I have always believed that there's a divine creator somewhere. People call it God, whatever it may be, it's out there. But I think the Bible has made reference to a lot of stories that might deal with extraterrestrials, calling them angels and things like that. Don't you think there's something in the Bible that might direct us to really what's going on?
Bible is, you know, among other things, a fantastic UFO book, really. I mean, and I don't wish to offend anybody when I say that.
No, because you believe in a higher power, too.
I do. Absolutely, I do. And I personally don't believe that every single line of the Bible is true, or accurate, shall we say, any more than I believe every word of any newspaper in the world is completely accurate, or any statement made by any politician is completely accurate. You know, there's things in it which aren't right. But what you do see in the Bible is a pattern. Last time I was on your show, actually, at the beginning of the year, we had a caller who, they may be listening now, who's described their sighting of a UFO as a large moving wheel in the sky.
Yeah, Ezekiel.
How's that?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got it exactly. That is exactly Ezekiel. And, of course, at this time of year, the most famous sighting of all time has to be the Star of Bethlehem, probably.
Do you think the Star of Bethlehem might have been this combination of Saturn and Jupiter that we're seeing now, or was there something else afoot here?
Well, as I said earlier, I don't believe every word of the Bible, and I know people, including avid Christians, sort of try to rewrite things quite a bit. But if we go by what is actually said in the book of St. Matthew, and I'm going to quote it just so we know what we're looking at here. It's about the wise men. So for a start, they're wise men, we're told. So they're not idiots. They're not delusional.
Mm-hmm.
They are discriminating people. And when they'd heard the king, they departed. And I now quote, "And lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was." And we know from the Bible that the young child was in a manger, in a stable or some kind of house. Now, that's not any conjunction. That's not any meteorite. There were no Earth satellites at that time, or aircraft, or probably Chinese lanterns. It moved, it led them, and then it stood still over a building.
It probably beamed itself. It probably beamed down on the building so they could see like a spotlight.
No doubt. And you know, I know people now try to write it off. They say, oh, well, it was an astronomical conjunction, or it was an astrological reading, but that's not what is described in the Bible. If you want to disregard the Bible, but strangely, some of the people who say these theories are people who would quote the Bible to you. So you can't really have it both ways. I think this was undoubtedly a spacecraft. And to be really positive about it, heralding the birth of, in my view, in the Aetherius Society view, in the view of Dr. George King, who founded the society, a great cosmic intelligence, namely Jesus.
Well, now, let me ask you something about that. And it's important that people understand we're not offending you. We're not saying Jesus didn't exist. We're talking about the possibilities of who he might have been. When they talk about his mother, the Virgin Mary, so she never was with Joseph, the apparent father of Jesus, that the appointed father of Jesus, as I should say. It sounds like to me, when you look at the story, it was an alien hybrid implantation of the birth of Jesus in her womb, if she was the virgin. And then Jesus is born, legitimately born, but that he might have been of extraterrestrial origin. What do you think of that?
I think that you're absolutely right. And this is something that Dr. King was saying in the 1950s, very controversially, as you can imagine, in a very conservative Britain at that time, and America, indeed, when he went there in the early 60s. Yeah, I think so. And I want to stress this, that it's unique. I mean, there are a number of births which are what you might call immaculate conceptions, I believe, through history. According to the contacts of Dr. George King with beings from other worlds, with aliens, if you like, immaculate conception is the methodology of birth on higher planets than ours. So I do think it could be arranged and brought about to bring an intelligence from another world here. But, I mean, the key thing is why, and this is what the Eastern writings, such as the Ramayana and the Bhagavad Gita and so on, refer to as an avatar being a divine incarnation who comes to Earth through birth, through the womb of a woman, an Earth woman. And, I think that's interesting in itself, because we're not just talking the Judeo-Christian religion here. We're talking the Hindu scripts and right across the board. And these are intelligences, just to name a couple of others. I would believe that Sri Krishna was one. I would believe the Lord Buddha was one, and others who came here, took on what you might call karma. I would use the word karma.
Mm-hmm.
Took on the sufferings and the human limitations of Earth in order to serve, in order to teach, and in the case of Jesus, in order to die, which was an arranged death. And I think that's very clear, really, from what we know of the story there.
Is it conceivable that the ETs that may have implanted Jesus are doing this at every kind of planet that has some kind of civilization? So they are literally starting the story of God and Jesus over and over again to educate some of these other life systems?
Well, I think it's possible that it happens elsewhere, yes. Not in this solar system, because this solar system
that just has us.
I just believe that they're far more advanced. They wouldn't require that at all. And on a higher planet than ours, a less primitive, a less savage and backward planet, which I'm afraid we are.
We still are, absolutely. We can't get our act together.
Exactly. And then it wouldn't be necessary to go that far, because they could have an open landing, an open coming together. I mean, one thing that the Israeli man I referred to earlier said is that, they've been told by alien intelligences in governments that we are not yet ready for this open landing. But I do believe that will come at the right time. There have been many, many landings and comings, but at the moment we're not ready for that. So, unfortunately, tragically, some of these wonderful intelligences, and they do stand out. Some Laozi would be another one. Heracles would be another one. In fact, Samson, whose mother was, as they used to say then, barren, that was another such birth, I believe. And they stand out. They are unique intelligences of great light. And that's the positive thing. It's just such a sad, sad thing that they have to come to our world in that very primitive way, in that very limited way.
In a few days, we celebrate Christmas, which is the birth of Christ. But you think there's another date involved here?
I do. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, Dr. King was a medium. We've discussed that before, for interplanetary intelligences. I would say, and I've kind of been looking into this quite a bit lately, that the type of mediumship that Dr. King used is very, very different from any other channeler that I've come across. And having talked to experts on channeling, I do channeling myself, none of us have ever heard of the kind of method he used. So I only mention that because it sort of marks him out. And I don't think your average medium or channeler would be able to bring through an interplanetary intelligence. I would never claim that. But in his contacts that he did have, he was given the date of March the 15th for the birth of Jesus. One of the intelligences who spoke through him actually was Jesus, I believe. And people can, I don't expect anyone to take my word for it, but the wonderful thing is, because of the transmediumship method that he used, people can actually hear the voice as it's delivered. And I've known of people who've heard that voice, didn't know who it was meant to be, and recognized it as being Jesus. I'm sorry, I got off topic there a bit. So the date would be March the 15th. I think it's in the book of Luke that shepherds were watching their flocks by night. And from what I understand, historically speaking, they wouldn't have been out overnight on December the 24th. Also, of course, people do know that the Christians, in many occasions, they used pagan festivals and sort of tried to take them over. The church, I shouldn't say the Christians, I said the early church, and turned what were celebrations, and this would be the winter solstice celebration, into Saturnalia, I think it's called, into Christmas. So it was used, and it's been turned into Christmas, and my goodness, people have completely, I don't know about in America, but certainly here, lost track of what we're really meant to be celebrating on Christmas Day, completely, it seems to me, for the most part. But no, in our view, and there's another very important reason why he came in March the 15th, and that is because he came in the Piscean astrological cycle. He came to herald the age of Pisces, which astrologers would say started 2,000 years ago, and that would be the age of emotion and an age of love. And no greater exponent of love can we think of than Jesus in his life and in his teachings.
You have mentioned that Jesus has been quoted as saying, "I am the root and the offspring of David and the bright morning star." What does that mean?
Yes. Well, that's in the book of Revelation, and of course, it's interesting, actually, the book of Revelation, which, as people will know, I'm sure, is the last book in the Bible, was said to have been delivered to St. John, probably not the St. John who was the disciple of Jesus, probably another St. John, who actually received it from Jesus, part of it, but through an angel. So that's an interesting sort of indirect, it would seem, communication methodology from Jesus through an angel to John, who was in Patmos, in a Greek island at
right,
the time.
Right, exactly.
But that statement, you know, is a very interesting one because, yes, he was from the house of David. In other words, he, in this physical body, they believe Joseph, his father, could trace his lineage back to King David. And then he says, and the bright and morning star. Well, that's well known to be Venus. And so that's taken as a statement. I keep mentioning, I'm not stating that every line in the Bible proves, you know, anything, because things can be wrong. But if you took that literally, then you'd say he came from Venus. When he spoke through Dr. King on an occasion in 1957 in a public meeting hall to a packed hall in London, one of the things that Jesus stated through Dr. King, and I now quote, "I came from Venus, and this is the truth. If this were not true, then, my friends, I would not tell you so, but it is so. Oh, my brother, surround me not with your dogma, but read your own hearts with open-minded care. Then when you've seen the face of God therein, you will know all things."
And what do you think of the authenticity of Dr. George King?
Well, I was lucky. I knew him very well, and I spent a lot of time with him. So I was lucky enough to see, you know, that he was genuine and a very great master of yoga, actually.
Was the doctor medical or PhD?
He got an honorary doctorate of theology from the International Theological Seminary in Van Nuys, California, which, you know, was just presented to him in those days. And,
okay.
And he decided to use it. It's not Harvard or Oxford University, obviously, but it's perfectly legal. And, he got some he should have had far more recognition than he did have, in my opinion, but that was his doctorate, an honorary doctorate for one of the books he wrote, actually, which was called You Are Responsible.
Was there anything about him, Richard, that made you question him or anything like that?
I questioned, especially when I first, came into the Aetherius Society, everything. With the leader of an organization, you're always looking to see if they're flawed, if there's a hypocrisy there, and so on. As I said, I could see him at very close quarters, just to name a couple of things about him. He was married, but he was completely celibate, and that was demonstrable to people through the decades, and he'd always said he was. His whole lineage in terms of mediumship rested on a 10-year period prior to his first contact. That's after the Second World War, up to 1954.
Hold on for a second, Richard. We're at the break. We'll come back and talk more about your incredible work. Richard Lawrence with us, UFOs and the extraterrestrial message. We will be taking your calls next hour with Richard Lawrence as we talk about ETs and Jesus and everything Christmassy. So we'll be doing that next hour on Coast to Coast. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you along with Richard Lawrence. We'll take calls with Richard next hour here on Coast to Coast. Back to some of the things in the Bible. You described that the Bible is one of the best UFO books in print. Tell us a little bit more about that, Richard.
Well, what you have is, and of course we have to remember that in those periods of history there was no known space travel, there was no aeroplanes or anything like that. So they're using very different terms. Mind you, having said that, the term flying saucer is a very poor description, I think. Although I did find, George, once in an 11th century Japanese document, a sighting, and they described it as a flying earthenware vessel. So it's probably not even new to us. But in the Bible, you're looking at objects. I mean, Ezekiel is perhaps the classic one, where a wheel within a wheel comes down and four, as it's put in the Bible, creatures emerge from it and make contact with Ezekiel and basically give him a commission to perform, which he, in the rest of the book, I think he's carrying that out. But in Exodus, you have some very interesting clouds, which clearly aren't clouds because Moses was taken up Mount Sinai, or I should say, I think to get it correct, he went up Mount Sinai and the cloud came and bringing these tablets of stone, which had to be re-inscribed, and the Lord appeared and delivered the Ten Commandments to him, of course, and there are clouds following them across Exodus, and I believe some of the other early books of the Bible. There are clouds in which Jesus is said to travel. Then there are, you know, fiery chariots with Elijah. One can go on. Actually, on the Aetherius Society website, that's aetherius.org, we have a page called UFOs in the Bible and a whole list of examples of UFOs in the Old Testament and the New.
You must know Dr. Barry Downing.
I know of him. I've never met him.
Yes, he is a staunch believer in biblical UFO stories, too.
And a religious man himself, I believe.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Actually, the man who founded the International Theological Seminary I mentioned, Dr. Frank Strange's, was both a claimed contactee or someone who...
Mm-hmm. He wrote the book Stranger at the Pentagon, right?
Exactly, yeah. You probably may have met him, but he also was a real evangelist gave, you know, tub-thumping evangelical speeches combined with ufology, which is interesting and I think makes a lot of sense, actually.
Tell us more about these messages that Dr. George King, the contactee, got.
What's interesting in that, and there are some of them in my book, UFOs and the Extraterrestrial Message, some of the very early messages in particular.
And that came out in 2014, right? 2014?
It did, and then a new edition came out this year.
Good.
And actually, I mentioned in it our interview this year, actually, George, because of the wheel within the wheel.
That's right. That's right.
Caller. Yeah. But the very early messages, and this is, I think, interesting, that Dr. King got, and that we're going back to here 55 or even possibly a late 54, he was told that these intelligences were not limited to the physical realm, let me put it that way. The sort of concepts that people are looking at now in astrophysics, and you've got people coming out and talking about, I mean, we have an astronaut here, Dr. Helen Sharman, who said that alien life, this year she said that alien life could be invisible to us. Those sorts of concepts were being put out in very early messages. Let me give you an example of this, and this is from the book. And this one was in 1954, in October, so very early on, delivered by the Master Aetherius, which is where we get our name from, because the first communicator with Dr. King used the name Aetherius. And he was talking about the fact that they're not necessarily physical on this level. And these are his words. It is not possible for me to give English names for the constituents of the molecules of the subtle bodies, because you have no words to describe them. So tenuous are these bodies It would be like giving a name to the molecules of your soul, as it were. And so he's describing there a higher life form, which is, we believe, if you were able to go to Mars and to Venus and to Jupiter, and if they let you see, and you were able to see, they wouldn't necessarily be physically visible, but they would be there. They'd be on a higher level. And that sort of idea, which Dr. King was talking about, this is one of the things he was talking about back in the 50s, is the stuff of science now. I mean, now we know that only 4% of the universe is visible matter, according to science. But, you know, there are cosmic wormholes, many believe, parallel universes, many believe. But those sorts of concepts weren't there then. And I think that, according to other people I've met who knew him in that period and who were in the UFO movement and the other names one thinks of, like Adamski and Fry and so on, that this is where Dr. King stood out right from the beginning, and I think he's been vindicated. Other things he spoke about were, I mean, essentially his message was a spiritual one, and he always tied the technology, if you like, of UFOs to spirituality. And in the UFO movement, that really was not welcome at all in those days, and until fairly recently. I mean, I noticed when I came, when the UFOs, the extraterrestrial message in its first edition was launched, and I came to America and I spoke at a number of MUFON meetings in different parts of America, a very positive change, actually, George, because even people who you might call nuts and bolts ufologists who didn't really like the spiritual message, they would accept and did accept that it's part of ufology, and it's one that has to be given. But it certainly wasn't then, when Dr. King was first coming out, and indeed when I was first talking about it in the 80s and so on, in the late 70s, it certainly wasn't tied into the UFO movement as it is now. And that's where Dr. King was a trailblazer, really, coming out with, for example, the Star of Bethlehem being a UFO in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm. Have there been any recent Jesus-type sightings with ETs?
I don't know of any. As far as I can't say there have been Jesus-type sightings. You mean like the Star of Bethlehem, in other words, leading people to... I can't.
Right, or
like
seeing
that.
Him physically show up again.
Well, I'm sure there are many people who wouldn't even believe in UFOs who would say they've had visions of Jesus, and I'm not going to disbelieve them either, necessarily. That's been ongoing through the centuries. I do think that the key thing, as far as the theorists are concerned anyway, is sort of to practice his teachings, and he's given some New Age teachings. We have a thing, actually, we have a website, which is 12blessings.org. That's 12blessings.org. And the purpose of that is it's not a profit-making site. Well, we're not profit-making anyway. But it's to send energy out. And boy, do we need it at the moment, spiritual energy out, using this practice given to us through Dr. King in the 1950s, called the 12 Blessings. And people are joining in who aren't necessarily members of the Aetherius Society. We're doing it virtually every day. Certainly starting next week, we'll be doing one every day. And people, what's great, George, is that we've got people from Iraq, from Iran, from the Philippines, from countries you wouldn't think, joining in for this half-hour service to send out light to the world. And gosh, that's the thing that we really need right now, especially with COVID.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about that.
And the great thing is we can do something about it, because the worst feeling, and experts on stress will always say this, is a feeling of helplessness, a feeling, I can't do anything. I'm just on my own. I can't make a difference in a war situation. I can't change a pandemic. But we can make a dent. We can put out some light, and it will help, and everyone can do that.
What do you think of the theory of the late Zechariah Sitchin, that the Anunnaki came here from another planet in our solar system and seeded us?
I think he's a very interesting writer. I'm no expert on Sitchin. My wife is a bit. The Anunnaki, I think, are very interesting. I don't think they exactly seeded us, but I do think we came to this Earth from another planet. I think it was called Maldek. I think it is now the asteroid belt. I think it was destroyed in a nuclear explosion. And we date that along with some theosophical writings as being over 18 million years ago. And so there's some sort of linkage there, maybe. And certainly the Anunnaki is a very interesting civilization and connection with interplanetary beings. I mean, if you look at the previous civilizations on Earth prior to the one we're in now, they're usually named as Lemuria and Atlantis in that order. And undoubtedly, especially in Lemuria, sometimes it's called Mu, there will have been probably very active contact and interflow with beings on other worlds. But this is one of the other big message, actually, that Dr. King was given to put out in the 50s, was the dangers of atomic experimentation, because we're back at that point again that those two civilizations reached. They both released the atomic warfare and destroyed their civilizations, and we could have then, and we could still, in theory, do the same thing. And a lot of it was warnings, and some of these warnings were extremely accurate, and there was information delivered which has been proved correct. I can give just one example.
Sure.
He identified the Russian atomic release that was being detected in early 1958 as being the result of the explosion in an atomic research laboratory. No one else was saying that at that time. No one else said it for 18 years, actually, that was the cause of it. And he published it at the time in 1958 based on a communication that he'd received.
What was that aha moment for you, Richard, when you realized that there could be something else to the Bible that most people didn't see?
I think it sort of came, for me personally, at the same time as my discovery of the Aetherius Society.
Because okay, all right.
I know I was raised in the church and the Church of England, as it is, and I actually was at a school which is tied into our biggest top cathedral here, which is called Canterbury Cathedral. I was at that school. I was thinking of being a priest. And I don't, again, wish to offend anyone, but I didn't find it answered certain questions which, for me, have to be answered. And I then was really into Eastern philosophy, and that's how I really came across Dr. King, actually, not through UFOs, but through yoga, which he was teaching, and there was a wonderful set of practices he published called Contact Your Higher Self Through Yoga, which I was using, and then it led into the whole cosmic aspect, and I had a sighting. So the Bible was just a logical development of that, and aha, and you know, for me, what was really great was, because the Aetherius Society is not the sort of the one and only way. We're not a cult. We're not trying to say that, you know, if you don't come to us, you haven't got anything at all, not at all. But what it did do for me was unify, all fitted in. It made perfect sense to me that you'd have an avatar coming in the Ramayana or in the early Hindu scripts to deliver a certain exercise, to perform a certain mission, and then you'd have the Lord Buddha coming at a certain time to perform a certain task which was needed at that time, and then you'd have Jesus coming at another time to perform a certain type of mission. Or you might go to ancient Greece, and Hercules had a particular mission to perform. And so it's very unifying. You know, this is something that isn't saying everything else is rubbish, but it's all part of a cosmic plan. And I think the Bible illustrates that, really, with this constant sort of interconnection. In various descriptions in the book of Zechariah, you've got a flying scroll. Well, that would probably be now called, or would, when I had a sighting at university, be called a cigar-shaped object, one assumes. And now you've got Tic Tacs. You've got different names, but it's been there throughout the millennia.
Isn't it amazing, the wonders of this universe, when you think about the complexity and then the possibilities of all these things happening? It's just remarkable, Richard, isn't it?
It's remarkable, and it's beautiful, and it's very hopeful, I think. And hope, I think, is one thing we really need at the moment. And that's one thing that Dr. King really did give, and the Aetherius Society does give, is some hope that there is actually a plan. It's not all haphazard. It's a very subtle plan. You know, the extraterrestrials are sort of way ahead of us. They know us. They know our limitations. They don't want to take over the planet, or they would have easily done so.
They could have done it by now, yeah.
Absolutely. So the hostile theories fall short for me. It doesn't mean to say there aren't hostile aliens, but they're not. We're protected, let's put it that way, because if we weren't, it would have been over a long time ago. And it's all leading to something. And it's leading to a great change. And that's upon us. And it's starting now. And we can all go with it. I think one of the missing links, actually, in, I would say, several religious and philosophical doctrines, is the importance of the planet, the Mother Earth. Not just from an ecological point of view, but from a spiritual point of view. And she is, I mean, and some of the so-called primitive ancients knew how important she was. I mean, in ancient Greece, Gaia was the number one goddess or god, and rightly so. And this is the great change. It's her change, and we have the opportunity to go with it. And it can be looked on as dangerous, it could be looked on as traumatic and difficult, but it can also be looked on as very exciting. And a future of great hope.
It is truly remarkable what has been going on, Richard, since the beginning of time. And it is probably one of the most exciting things that we can go through with mankind. And where do people get your books?
Well, UFOs and the Extraterrestrial Message, you can obviously get it from Amazon. You can get it from some bookshops. You can get it via my website, which is richardlawrence.co.uk. And also, if you go to aetherius.org, you'll see a lot of the books of Dr. King. And the one that I would pick out, which we've discussed before on your program, actually, is The Nine Freedoms.
Okay, we're going to come back and take calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM.